2, 1, begin transmission.
Hello, once again. I can imagine you can hear lots of cicadas. However, this is not the Dubious Cicada Committee. You're listening to the Dubious Goals Committee right here on Anon Radio. Why? Because it's 1930 UTC, and that's what you do at 1930. You listen to the Dubious Goals Committee. My name is Tobe. I'm your host and chairman. And although it is 1930 UTC, wow, it's actually about 1945 local time. It's about 7:45, about quarter to eight. And we're here at Herrenhaven during golden hour. Although it's not very golden because it is overcast this evening. And so there's not a lot of light. And as I walk into the forest here, boy, it gets real dark real fast. And you might be asking yourself, well, if it's so dark, why are we there if we're there to see stuff? Well, because I said so. Because this is a real good time to see stuff, especially out by the water and in the blind and stuff like that. And I haven't been out here during golden hour in quite some time, so I thought, well, let's go out there, see if we can find some dudes. And then it's pretty cool. There's no sun, and plus it's, you know, almost sunset, and so, you know, it's probably not even 70 degrees right now, or right around there. And I think we'll take this opportunity to go out onto the boardwalk and see if we can find some dudes doing dude stuff. Maybe we can find some snappers. Maybe we can find some snoodlers. Maybe we can find some scratties. We haven't found scratties in so long. I don't even know if there's any here. But if there are, this is the time when they're usually running around doing stuff, swimming around doing stuff. So we're gradually making our way up the path. I can see the sub pond from here. Everything's really overgrown, but everything's just beginning to die down too, so yeah, you can kind of see. I'm scanning the water line back here. I don't see anything, so let's head out onto the boardwalk here. We got another 40 yards to go or so. Call it 30 meters. Walking between all the grass and all the super tall cattails, which have gotten crazy tall. It's a little breezy. Not quite as windy as yesterday, and as soon as I say that, you know, the big wind blows. And, oh, I see a little duck. I'm just coming out of the forest on the boardwalk, and somebody over there saw me, and he's flying away. Guess who it is? That's right, Big Bluey. He's flying over the end of the boardwalk, and he's flying out to the other side. And, oh, there's a couple little ducks over on a log, and apparently they didn't like me either, so they went honking and quacking and running away. I can see into the water because all the duckweed has been blowing around, and there's little fishies darting around, and possibly some pollywogs. There's some more ducks flying over. It's a little bit windy. There's another duck flying over my head. And who's that over there flying away? Oh, it's another blue heron. Is that Big Bluey? Okay, something weird's going on here. Well, guess we'll look into it. And there's a couple dragonflies flying around. There's a lot of excrement, or what was at one point lots of poop on the boardwalk right here. Who's been pooping on the boardwalk? In the spring, it's always geese, but there's no geese. And that's not heron poop. Yes, I can tell the difference between heron poop and other poops. Maybe it's just duck poop. Is that a bat? Do I have bat? Nope, not a bat. Just a swallow. I'm almost to the end of the boardwalk, and as I look out there, I can hear some frogs chirping at me. Oh, what's over there? Oh yeah, over there on a log is a couple of ducks. And way out there, there's half a dozen ducks, and there's another duck a little bit closer, a duck flying across the water. Looks like there's something over there too. Looks like a goose, but I know it's not one. And I see some duckies on yet another log close to the waterline. Yeah, we got a lot of ducks on logs in here tonight. Yay, ducky ducky. Alright, so I'm turning around and walking back down the boardwalk. There's lots of frogs in the water. Here's a big one. Hi, Biggie. Oh, and here's his friend, Other Biggie. It's Biggie and Other Biggie, the frog buddies. Scanning the waterline in the reeds. I don't see any snoodlers sticking their heads out. Sometimes you will. This is a good time to find snoodlers. And if this is your first time listening to the Dubious Goals Committee, you may be asking yourself, what the heck is a snoodler? A snoodler is a raccoon. They are named snoodlers because they snoodle. Snoodling is hand fishing for raccoons, as opposed to noodling, which is hand fishing for human beings. So what raccoons do is they come to the edge of the water, they stick their hands in the water, and they start feeling around. They grab fishies and crawdads and sometimes turtles and frogs and whatever else they can grab for a quick lunch and or dinner. All right, well, I'm just about off the boardwalk now. And I'm in a spot where I can kind of see back into one of the hidden ponds, but yeah, there's so much vegetation that we can't really see back in there. In the spring you can see back there, and a lot of times blue herons will hang out back there because it's really protected, and so you can kind of end up getting kind of close to them. But not today. There's nothing back there today. So looking back here at the sub pond, there's nobody back here. There's some frogs in the water though. Some big clunky lunkers. Alright, I guess we should just sort of head back into the forest. Go out to the blind and see if we can see any snoodlers or any other doodlers out there. Alright, what have I been doing today? Well, yesterday you might remember me talking about my friend Brian. Oh, here's Mr. Bun. Hi, little bunny. He's just hanging out in the middle of the path. I'm going the other way, though. And as you'll remember, Brian asked me if I wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons. And I said, oh my god, why do you even ask me that question? Of course I want to play Dungeons & Dragons. Gives me an excuse to build stuff. Now you might be wondering, now Tobe, you're old. You're an old person. Why are you playing Dungeons and Dragons like a child? Well, it turns out that Brian has children. And he has a daughter named Lily who is about, oh, I don't know, 8 or 9. And somehow, I think through a friend, she discovered Dungeons and Dragons. So Brian went out and got her a player's handbook, and she's been a little D&D crazy, but hasn't actually played yet. So Brian said, hey, you want to set something up? And I said, of course I do. The funny thing is that for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now, I've been gradually accumulating supplies to build a dungeon, to play Dungeons and Dragons. Or more accurately, I was just going to invent my own dungeon crawl game based on the old D20 system. And so I've been accruing junk styrofoam, you know, bead styrene, and at one point in time I was in a thrift store and I found an old HeroQuest game that was pretty much junk, but it had a lot of miniatures, and so I managed to get a lot of cheesy plastic miniatures for very cheap, for just a couple of bucks, you know, like at least 3 dozen monsters and player characters and all kinds of stuff. Wow, it's getting dark back here in the forest. So anyway, I have all these supplies ready to build a dungeon, so yay, I'm going to build a dungeon. Oh, here's some Caprinus mushrooms all growing up out of the clinker next to a stump. They cut down a tree or two here to make the path wider so we could get wheelchairs through here. So anyway, today I started working on Lily's dungeon so we can play Dungeons and Dragons. This is going to be some pretty simple entry-level type of stuff, and so I got out some scrap junk styrofoam and my hot wire cutter and started cutting up styrofoam into various cavernous shapes so we can put this on the table and pretend we're in caves. And you know, I made little passageways and a couple of rooms. Basically, I did 3 modules, and I'll do our whole game with just these 3 modules. Because, you know, like I said, it's going to be kind of simple. This is the kid's first exposure to dungeon crawling, and so she doesn't need anything super fancy right now. You know, leave yourself room to grow, you know what I'm saying? So I cut all this stuff out, and it is currently sitting on the floor of my garage drying because I spray painted it. Yeah, a couple years ago I even bought a can of the special spray paint that doesn't eat styrofoam so I could do this, and sure enough, it happened. So I was glad I had that paint. So just, you know, about an hour ago I was in my garage spray painting styrofoam. So now we're just letting it dry. Alright, so I'm walking into the blind here. I wonder if anything's on the log right here. Anybody on the log? Oh, I was hoping there'd be ducks there. What's going on out here then, if there's no ducks on the log? What's over there? Nothing. There's nothing in the delta. I thought there would be ducks on that log. No, all the ducks are out in the middle of the pond, out in the middle of the lake. Because it's nighttime. I can see some way out there. There's nothing going on. Oh, bumping into stuff now. There's nothing going on here. So now I'm leaning way out of the blind trying to look on the banks here. But everything's sort of overgrown enough that, yeah, you know, I can't see jack. Can't see any ripples. Nothing. And it is starting to get much darker. All the bugs are having fun making noise. You can always tell when a warm weather edition of the Dubious Goals Commission Committee is on the air, because that's all you hear is massive bug noise in the background. So anyway, hopefully when I get home, this special paint will have dried. You know, it's not all that special. It's just latex and whatever the solvent is, water. And the propellant is, it doesn't eat styrofoam. If you try to paint styrofoam with regular spray paint, you'll just have a soggy mess on your hands. a very soggy, very sticky disaster. Once this base coat of gray latex paints dries, then I'll just go over these pieces with a dark brown wash, get some color into all the crevices, then I'll go over it and dry brush it, and it'll end up looking like rock, like limestone or gray granite or something, and it will look like the caverns of whatever. So now, while I'm waiting for it to dry and also painting and blah blah blah, I've also got to come up with some backstory, some scenario, you know, a setting, what we call in the industry fluff. It doesn't really have anything to do with the function of the game, it's part of the story. And I actually will have to design a dungeon. What I have from these styrofoam pieces, these are just, you know, various rooms and passageways. So now I gotta draw up a map of what the actual dungeon looks like, and then I gotta populate the dungeon. And I don't have a lot of miniatures. I just got these cheesy plastic ones. But I found some good ones that are pretty close to traditional Dungeons & Dragons monsters, so we'll populate the dungeon with those. I'll make a master map for myself. I'll make a player map. Or maybe I'll just add into the scenario that the players have memorized the map. And, you know, we'll have sort of your standard backstory along the lines of, oh, the king or whoever. Okay, yeah, no, here we go. Here's my backstory for this dungeon. The Duke of Fangulia, or whatever, invites the adventuring party to his castle in hopes that the adventuring party will do some work for him. And he tells the party this story. Blah, blah, blah. My great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, 150 years ago, discovered a small cave or a small cavern system under the castle, and so he had it widened and, you know, made bigger and developed a little bit, and they used it for their dungeon. However, now 150 years later, you know, they haven't used the dungeon in, you know, many generations, and so the current Duke of Fangulia wants to turn the caves into his wine cellar. However, being as these caves have gone unused, in the meantime, lots of other, you know, beasties have moved in. And so the Duke of Fangulia needs our adventurous party to go in and clear it out so he can turn the old dungeon into his wine cellar. How's that? You know, it's pretty typical with a little twist. And so, you know, we'll have our adventuring party, which will be Lily, and I'll play a non-player character, and I'm sure her dad will play. Maybe we'll get some other players. And they'll go in there and they'll find some monsters and have to deal with them. They'll get some experience. Maybe they'll find some treasure. And maybe the Duke of Fangulia will reward them for basically securing his wine cellar. And this means I won't have to make too many other props, so, you know, I won't have to make any treasure chests or anything like that. I will have to make some torches. I'll make some torches and I'll stick them into the walls of the cavern. And maybe I should make a couple little treasure piles or something small. Who knows? Like I said, it's not going to be anything super special. Very entry level. Beginning dungeons for the uninitiated. So I got some work to do. I'll be working on that tonight. I'll probably whip up a crude map tonight. start populating it. I'll take some notes. Then I'm actually going to have to get out some books. But, you know, I don't have much. But I do have, I think, D&D 3.0. Or maybe it's 2.5, I can't remember. Oh, who's this up here in the grass by my car? That's another bun. Hi, bun. And there he goes. He's going hoppity hop hop hop. And now he's standing right in front of the door of Harrenhaven. There is a building here. We call it the Nature Center. And that bun wants to go in the Nature Center and see what's up. Myself, I want to go down this little access path here. And do I want to go now? Let's go into the mushroom garden instead. Ooh, it's really dark back there. It is getting dark. The sun's been going down for a while. There's some geese flying overhead. They're flying from the golf course where they graze all day. Then they come to Harrenhaven to overnight. Honk, honk, honk. Very talky. Talk, talk, talk. Mama, mama, honk, honk. Well, I'm in the middle of the mushroom garden now, and it's dark in here. Can't see Jack. Well, it's not that dark. But I'm walking over to the marmot den. And I can't see anything in there. I heard a funny noise. What was that? Is there Monty's looking at me? Are there Monty's back here hiding? I don't see any Monty's. So anyway. Alright, I'm going to turn around and I guess we're going to get back in the car and go home. I just got to remember not to pull into my garage after I open the garage door. Because if I drive into my garage, I will drive over my freshly painted dungeon modules. Don't do that. All that work. Well, you know, it's only about 2 hours total worth of work, but then I would have to cut out some more styrofoam. Ooh, got a nice breeze. Nice lovely breeze here. Alright, I'm back to my car. I don't know how to work it. There we go. Alright, let's go back to my house in 3, 2, 1, 0. We are back in the studio. And you'll be glad to know that when I pulled up, I remembered not to drive into my garage and therefore did not destroy my new dungeon. And on the way home, I was thinking about various dungeon accoutrements. And I thought, don't I have some torches left over from a previous project? And yeah, I'm not sure exactly how many I have. 3 or 4. Maybe half a dozen at the most. But I'm going to need more than that for my dungeon, which means I'm going to make torches. Now you might be asking yourself, well, how do you make torches for a scale like that? Well, if you go online, you'll notice that for some reason, a lot of people like to use Q-tips, and that makes no sense because it's so out of scale that it looks horrible. You know, you're talking about a torch that is about twice the thickness of your leg, the length of your entire body, and has a head, you know, that's twice the size of yours, and so it's got a huge flame on it that keep to scale, people. Scale. So here's my technique for making torches. And all you need is a hot glue gun and a bunch of straight pins, along with some paint and paint brushes, blah, blah, blah. And the straight pins can be any length. I tend to use kind of short ones, like half inch or 3/4 inch, but you can always use long ones and cut them. And what you do is you paint the top third, meaning the end with the head, paint that black, and then you paint the rest of the pin brown. Or you can paint the whole thing black. It doesn't really matter. Kind of, I mean, it depends on how close anybody's going to be looking. So you wait for the paint to dry, and you plug in your hot glue gun, you let it heat up, and then what you do is you hold your glue gun like you're shooting the ceiling, so it's pointing straight up, and you barely depress the trigger so that a very small bead of glue starts to come out the muzzle of the glue gun. And while that's happening, then you take one of the pins that you painted, your basic sort of torch, and you dip the head into that little bead of hot glue. And you do it so that the head is sort of pointing down at a 45 degree angle into the glue. And once you got the glue on the head, you kind of twist it in your fingers so it picks up glue. And then you pull the pin away from the glue going straight up. And that'll cause the glue to stretch and sort of form an upside down teardrop shape, right? And then you wait a few seconds for the glue to solidify. And basically that's it. You do this a bunch of times, however many torches you need. And then you paint them. And painting them is very easy too. What you do is you take some yellow paint and mix it with some gel gloss medium, which you don't really have to do. It makes the paint shiny after it dries. You know, I usually use latex paint and it dries flat. If you want it to be shiny, you got to add some kind of gloss medium. And I like gel gloss. But you don't have to do this. You can always add the gloss later. You could just, you know, coat the whole thing after it's painted with Future, or whatever Future is called these days, which is a clear floor polish. Just look it up. Anyway. So then to paint the torch, you paint the glue, the little drop of glue. You paint it yellow, very bright, bright yellow, but not like fluorescent. Although you could if you really wanted to. Something this small doesn't really matter. You paint it yellow, and you let that dry. Then you take a little bit of orange and just sort of graze the tip of the flame with orange. And then you can even do red too if you want. But, you know, basically you want to have like a yellow base, and then as the flame, the glue, sort of tapers upward, paint that part orange. And once that's dry, you can coat it with something clear, like gel gloss medium or Future floor polish or any sort of clear finish, enamel, lacquer, you know, whatever you just happen to have laying around. You let that dry and that's your torch. You can then stick those in the wall and they stick up at about a 45 degree angle, and that flame sticks straight up and it looks like a flame, and it is really good for torches. So I got to make a bunch of those, and then you stick them into the styrofoam walls of your dungeon, and now you have these convenient torches for light. And if you want to get really fancy, you can make little sconces out of paper or little jewelry findings or whatever you want. I won't do that. These will just be, you know, torches that are sort of hammered into the rock walls. And that's how I make torches for dungeons. Am I going to make any of those tonight? Probably not. I got too much gross painting to do. I don't need to do any fine painting. I need to just finish painting my dungeon stuff. I wonder if that stuff's dry. I guess I'll go out and find out. Who am I, you might ask? Well, my name's Tobe, and I'm the chairman of the Dubious Dungeon Committee, a show that airs every day at 19:30 right here on and on radio. So, I'll see you tomorrow. I got dungeons. Bye.
This is the end of the line for me. The end of the line, yes.